Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Big Ticket Variety and iHeart's Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. This week, I've got Ron Howard, and we had a lot to talk about, including his upcoming adaptation of Hillbilly Elegy. Plus, he tells me why Shia LaBeouf made him cry. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Now, Ron Howard talking about his new documentary about Luciano Pavarotti. Hello, Ron Howard.
How are you?
Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Pleasure to be
here. We're going to talk opera.
Wow, how about that?
Pavarotti. How did that come about?
Well, while I certainly knew about Pavarotti and a little bit about opera, not a lot, more about opera than I knew about outer space when I did Apollo 13 or Formula One when I started Rush. Right. But it's the same team that did Beatles 8 Days a Week. And once again, Nigel Sinclair, the producer, has made so many terrific music documentaries. And we had a great experience on 8 Days a Week. He knew I was looking to reteam with him because it's Paul Crowder's brilliant doc director and editor, and Mark Monroe, terrific writer. Our chemistry was fantastic, and I loved working on 8 Days a Week. So brought the idea of Pavarotti, and once again, similar to the Beatles, 8 Days a Week movie, he said, look, we found some new footage. I think the family is interested or willing to talk. We don't know for sure, but does the character interest you at all? And I said, well, it's kind of perfect for me because I love explorations where I have a innate respect and fascination, but not necessarily all that much knowledge, which, by the way, even includes the Beatles movie. Mm-hmm. And in delving into it, I just began to see an interesting character story and set of relationships. And the opera was obviously clearly cinematic, mm-hmm. could be very meaningful. Chris Jenkins, I felt, would mix it again. And, I knew he'd have a field day and create, an opportunity here to give audiences a sort of total experience.
You know, we all know, you hear Pavarotti. Yeah. You just think a big voice. He sang really well. But what did you learn about him as a man, as a character?
Well, like I already knew he was incredibly charismatic because probably before I ever was even aware of hearing Pavarotti, I met him very, very briefly. So this was on the Paramount lot, just a big sort of publicity sort of event of some sort, and there were a lot of movie stars, television stars there. But when Pavarotti showed up, that was it, And I had just a very brief handshake, but I mean the charisma was so clear; it was there. In fact, in our documentary, we have an American Express commercial. It was one of the things that really sort of introduced him very broadly to audiences. And we don't mention it in the documentary, but Tom Bosley, who played my dad on Happy Days, he was the voice of American Express at that point. And so it's Tom's voice tagging that commercial that we use, which I get a huge smile.
Full circle.
From every time. So I understood how charismatic he was. A little bit later in my life, I began to appreciate the talent. But I had no idea what the journey was. And there is, it's a sort of a great rags to riches story, very influenced by World War II and that sort of neo-realist, it wasn't neo-realist to them, it was neo-realist to me, who liked movies like The Bicycle Thief. But that was his world. And I thought that was very interesting. There was an interesting relationship with his father. His father was a very talented tenor, but for whatever reason, perhaps stage fright, never really could turn the corner and become a working professional. He had real doubts about his son's ability to. His mother believed in him. So there are just all these dynamics, not relationships that he developed. But the most interesting thing was this joy that he had, this pursuit of this art form. Really was equaled by his passion for life. Now, he couldn't live, he wasn't a rock and roll, destructive, crazy. He was really always protecting the voice. Mm-hmm. So he was always very, very careful. But he grabbed for those relationships, those moments in life that, in addition to his work, would enrich him, thrill him, et cetera. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact, again, sort of psychologically interesting, that he had a near-death experience shortly after World War II, horrible infection that they didn't quite know how to beat. So, you know, all of these things just added up to a really great human interest story, which is kind of what I'm always looking for. Mm-hmm. And yet there's opera. So there's going to be great music. There's going to be drama. There's theatricality. And last, I would say, even in those initial conversations, when I began listening to the arias and also reading the lyrics, which I'd never really done, and I began to understand the themes of those, not only the operas and the stories, but the moments being dramatized through the arias. I thought, I bet we can use these arias to help dramatize moments in his life, and in a way, we can maybe make an opera about Pavarotti using these arias that he sang.
Well, I was going to say, why didn't you do a scripted feature biopic?
Well, I mean, again, Nigel brought this to me. I'm really enjoying my fairly recent, foray into doc filmmaking. I find it incredibly stimulating. It satisfies my curiosity. There's still time for me to continue directing, narrative scripted projects, which I think it informs my work. I think I think there's something about the constraints, in a way, of the documentary format that demands the understanding, the analysis, the thought, but it's not so simple. You don't just get an actor to state the theme. You can't decide what shots you have necessarily, mm-hmm. outside of a few rare circumstances. And I think creatively, I immediately started feeling that influencing my work in scripted films and television shows. So it's something I wanted to keep going. Now, imagine my company with Brian Grazer. We love the idea. We're developing Aretha Franklin right now. Right. So down the road,
I thought right away, genius.
He is a genius. I certainly have come to realize that. But for the moment, this is what we're doing with Nigel and Paul and Mark.
And Pavarotti the man definitely had drama in his life.
Look, Bono says it. Luciano could sing opera brilliantly, but his life was an opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that immediately, even before I heard that quote. Right. But my gosh, Bono's interview. I mean, we should get permission to just put the whole thing online.
Call him right now.
it was a shame. Anytime we had to cut a line, because he is so astute, so articulate, so passionate, and he really helped it. In his interview, he really helped us achieve the thing that I was hoping for, which is to sort of understand the price, the cost of the effort and the art form, and what it means to be that kind of a singer, and also show the real love and affection that he feels toward this artist as unpredictable, even mercurial, yeah. as he could be, and some of the choices that he'd make, yeah. some of the regrets that he gathered, as Bono says, it's sort of all there in the performances.
Were you surprised? I was surprised to learn. I'm not a Pavarotti expert, but I was a little surprised to learn all of a sudden we're going in the dock and he has this girlfriend who was his assistant,
right.
but you're interviewing his widow, right. or ex-wife, I guess, right. at that point.
Right.
So I'm like, wait, is the what? Is his wife still around?
And his widow.
Right.
Well, I mean, again, this is it. And also you have to remember, as we make clear in the documentary, you're talking about Italy during that period. Right. And the idea of divorce is something that, was not done or certainly highly problematic, right? So I don't think that initial relationship as sort of beautiful and significant as it was for him, it yielded the children and all relationships that were precious to him. including the first wife, Adderall, yeah. always. He never spoke badly. But I think the romance is gone. I think their lives kind of went in different directions in a way with him on the road. Not to make excuses, just life. And I do think that he went through a series of relationships. I think they were kind of unsatisfying in certain ways where they just didn't come to fruition. Because mm-hmm. I think he was very romantic.
Right.
And I think he wanted to be singularly in love.
Well, it was really when watching him in some of the restaurant footage, I guess, and everyone's singing, I was like, I just want to hang out with him.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go eat pasta with Pavarotti and just be around that table.
I know people who did have that experience, and everyone raved about it. And the fact of the matter is, even people who would acknowledge, you know, he could be a kind of a prima donna. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was very particular. He would, if he didn't feel it, if he didn't feel well, he would cancel. He would cancel shows. He lived that way and frustrated people. But he was always coming from a place that people could somehow understand and relate to, and they liked him. Mm. They appreciated him, and it was interesting just to see that. And I think you see it in the family. Even some of those, even the women who he'd had relationships with and broken off, that there really wasn't bad blood. There was sadness, but I didn't even feel regret or remorse.
I think he
felt some remorse.
But the ex-wife feeding him when he's on his deathbed.
Yeah, and
that just.
Well, they there's
that's a, operatic.
There's love there. There's just true love and appreciation, and an understanding and acceptance. It is unusual. It's dramatic, and I think in some ways I found it moving. Right. Yes,
and he was insecure.
Very.
Which we hear it all the time about artists that deep down inside. Everyone's insecure, but to hear this man who's been given this voice, like, how do you look at a performance and say, you know what, I could have done better?
I go to die. I mean, he dreaded these performances, which is probably, again, why later in his life, when he wasn't always feeling well, he would just decline. Because, look, the art form meant so much to him. This didn't come easily to him. That's the other surprise. You asked me earlier, at the beginning of the conversation. I was really surprised to see that he was not a prodigy, he was well into his 20s before he began to make a living at it. Mm-hmm. After 6 years of hard training, leaving his job as an elementary school teacher to finally try to take the leap, thanks to his mom pushing him a little bit, and finally making that breakthrough. And I think that dedication was something that he, never. I don't think he ever took the art form or the career fully for granted. Right. Even if he was canceling here and there, I think he was probably doing it. Not because he was bored. I think he was doing it because he didn't think he could live up to it. Right. But how about the scene? There's a scene at the end where one of his daughters is talking about him when he's very ill, deathly ill, and not performing anymore. He doesn't really want to listen to any of his recordings, and he finally agrees to, and because he never liked hearing his voice. I mean, I don't like hearing my voice either, but I'm not. I'm not a singer. I don't mind watching my movies. I can do that most of the time. I don't look back very much, to be honest. But and then he's watching, and he sort of. It's beautiful to see the way she explains it, but that he thought, well, I was good. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a surprise. And it's a beautiful, beautiful moment to contemplate. Maybe that insecurity, again, is what fueled him. So I think there's always this question of which we deal with in our genius series all the time. You're right. It makes him a good candidate. But what fuels genius? What pushes people to greatness?
And someone like Pavarotti, like you said, he wasn't a prodigy. So is he a born genius? Is he a genius who he's developed? Can you develop into a genius?
I think he he came from a place and a family that revered it. His father was a tenor and apparently very good. Right. You know, Pavarotti was kind of famous for saying he's the better singer. I think that art form demands a level of commitment. I doubt if there are any naturals.
Right.
There are people who probably have it in their structure, their DNA, to perhaps be able to achieve these things. But it is a really interesting art form, as I came to discover, because, you know, it's acting, it's performance, but there's also an athleticism required.
Well, what was it who said about feeling her
the breath and the strength and the muscles
abs, yeah.
and the abs and the controlling the breath. And so all of that factors into every performance. And so these performances really, really did take a kind of physical toll or at least there was a price to be paid, like great athletes. I think listening, once you just stop and think about it a little bit and know anything really about it, and you start listening to some of these arias, you realize it is a little bit like watching, you know, Michael Jordan take off at the free throw line and slam dunk. I mean, that's like not supposed to quite be possible.
Right. And then at the end, you're kind of exhausted.
Yes. I think when you watch opera, I think you're also seeing this demonstration of human capability that's kind of mind blowing. Mm. And I really wanted, again, to use the movie and I hope a lot of people go and see it in a theater if possible, because we are trying to create a kind of a, as I said, a sort of an opera about Pavarotti, absolutely using every state of the art device we could to make it a great experience for people. Man, when the mix, Chris Jenkins is really remarkable and loved this subject, and really it's a labor of love for him. This, but we have a couple of sequences with the three tenors.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
There is, you could watch that over and over again, and it's almost like every time you watch it, it's as if you're watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
And when they start competing,
it's incredible.
That was amazing.
And you realize it is something, there is competition, and you also see, and it's probably one of the reasons the three tenors were so successful and interesting, especially to maybe non-opera devotees, is that they actually do all sing differently.
Yes.
It isn't the same.
Right.
You know, there is interpretation, there is style, there is their own instrument at work, you know, and that's, I found all that really entertaining and fascinating.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Ron Howard is giving us an update on the Aretha Franklin season of Nat Geo's Genius. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Here's more of Ron Howard. So Aretha Franklin, who is going to play Aretha Franklin?
Well, we're still working on it. We are still working
how
on it.
How do you even cast something like
that? Well, it's there will be at least a couple of ages, just as we did with Einstein and Picasso, as we encompass as much of the life as possible. But I really can't talk about it too much because it's honestly just being written and shaped. We're going to do justice.
Do you already have the music rights? Because you need the music.
We need the music rights. Yes. No, we're in good shape there.
That's great. And so, does this mean Mary Shelley is sort of put to the side, or is that happening at the same time?
Mary Shelley is, I think, put to the side, and a great subject. A handful of the scripts have been written, but Aretha seems to have both the network and our attention at the moment.
And Hillbilly Elegy. This is a controversial book.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Why would I walk into that?
Right. Especially this time period.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're about to go into 2020. Oh. And I forgot how controversial the book was when it came out. Was it a conservative book? Was it a liberal book? Who loves it? Who hates it?
Well, I think you know, people from both sides feel both emotions about it. Some more than others.
Right.
The movie story is the case study of the family. I think it's incredibly relatable. So when you peel away J.D. Vance's own sort of sociological explorations or theories, and which it's not this film's job to dramatize. What captured me and what I thought was interesting was that story of this one particular American family from, you know, a specific region, and navigating the aspects of their families, their personalities, and to some extent their culture that can be problematic in this day and age, mm-hmm. and also recognizing some of those strengths. And I think everybody in every corner of probably every country, but let's talk about America, has a version of that, wherever they come from.
Do you see yourself screening it at the White House?
No. I could probably just blurt that out and be very confident.
Because, you know, there are people who use the material in the book as support for Trump. This is the reason Trump was elected.
I think it's not so much support for, I mean, I don't interpret it that way. Right. And I don't think J.D. Vance does. Mm. I don't think he even intended it to be as political as it was interpreted to be. I mean, even within his own family, his grandmother, who's an amazing character Glenn Close is going to play, she was a Bill Clinton lover, loved him. Mm-hmm. All that aside, I think it is a look at a corner of our culture and population that is a large one and has probably gone a little bit underserved. Mm-hmm. And my family comes from Oklahoma and Kansas. I never lived there. J.D. Vance is also not a hillbilly.
Right.
But that's why I like the title. Mm. It's like the echoes of that culture have certainly influenced him, just as honestly I feel it.
Right.
From my own family. And I think that it's an important time. You know, my plan, and we haven't shot it yet. We're just getting underway. Certainly is to tell this family story in as honest and straightforward a way as possible, and again use it as this case study for the struggle to sort of overcome certain cycles of that problematic, you know, circumstances and behavior, but also to recognize that society plays a role in almost everything, mm-hmm. that impacts us and shapes things. And I think that, I think the actors are very excited to tackle these characters. We have a terrific cast shaping up.
And a couple of fun questions, and then I'll let you go because I know you have to go. Yeah. When was the last time you cried watching a movie?
Oh, man. When was the last time I cried? Well, I tell you, I got very emotional watching the movie where Shia LaBeouf was basically playing his father. I think maybe having been a child actor myself, although my circumstance quite different, it was a very constructive experience, but I thought that movie was raw and true. So I was really empathetic with it, mm-hmm. and open to it and really admired it. And I found it very moving.
What movie could you watch over and over again? Every time it pops on, you're like, I'm going to watch it.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That right. blend of comedy, those ideas, the unbelievable, impeccable performances, top to bottom, Haskell Wexler's photography, the direction, the staging, everything about it just kind of rivets me because it's full-on entertainment with, you know, fueled by ideas and this really artful execution that is just, I really, really... you know, admire that movie.
And now they're going to do a series on Nurse Ratched.
Are they?
Yes, Sarah Paulson.
Well, she'll be great. I'll be checking that out.
Awesome. Ron, thank you so much. This
Pleasure.
Is awesome.
Thank you. Thank
really
you.
Great.
Pleasure.
I hope everyone goes see Pavarotti in the theater.
That would be nice.
It's important because especially for the three tenors.
Yeah, yeah. There's some great moments that we were able to get. Thanks.
That was Ron Howard. Thanks for listening to this week's Big Ticket. Don't forget, a new episode of The Big Ticket drops every Thursday. See you next week.